Tarkwa very late. It's English a half length in front. Can he do it to Tarkwa? He's flying. Yes, there's history. Tarkwa makes it three in a row.
Wayne Hawkes, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Moonee Valley. You just live around the corner, don't you?
I do live around the corner, and quite fitting you have Octagonal and Chautauqua in the montage coming in. 1995 Cox Plate. We had three runners that day, and they all won. Had seven winners nationally, and I remember doing a cartwheel through the mounting enclosure that I'm looking at right now after the last. A little bit intoxicated.
Richard Litt is over the moon because his three-year-old, Casavecchio, gains a start in the Cox Plate. The Hawkes family know how to win a Cox Plate with a three-year-old.
Yeah, we've had a bit of luck, and with Octagonal winning the Cox Plate, and Viscount was he ran third in that year that he was the double protest against Northerly and Sunline, where he sort of, as Kieran McAvoy said, he got carried along in mid-air for a couple of strides. So takes a very, very good horse. When you're talking Octagonal, you're talking one of the greats. Is Castelvecchio one of the greats? That's for everyone to decide, but it's a big step up in class. There's no doubt about that for a spring three-year-old.
Where do you rate the WS Cox Plate?
Oh, it's right up there. It's the race, the race you want to win. You know, you ask Chris Wilder, and I know the answer because he's told me that all he wanted to do was win a Cox Plate, and then he kept saying, I've done it once, I want to do it again and again and again. This is the race. There's no doubt about that. You know what? Melbourne Cup's where it lives. Everest is where it lives. But the Cox Plate is the Cox Plate. And you know what? History's there to be changed and everything. But this is a time-honoured race that, it'll always go down in history as the great race.
I love the build-up. And well done to the Moonee Valley Racing Club. I enjoy their breakfast because...
Did you have bacon and eggs?
No, I didn't, actually. I'm on a diet. But
I would be too if I was you.
Racing is... we're in the entertainment game here. And the drama that the breakfast had this morning, because we did not know who was in the field. And the other aspect that I really enjoy is that the connections get to choose their barriers for the Cox Plate. Do you like that?
The emergency's drawing a barrier. Yeah,
that's annoying a little bit.
Yeah, that, you know, I do like the thing where you get to draw your barrier, because it just adds a bit of hoo-ha to it. I'll tell you one other thing it does do, and every owner, trainer, jockey that's listening right now knows it. When you get barrier 15 comes out, then you draw 15 again the next dart, you always think to yourself, is this rigged? Whereas this morning, you actually knew in front of everyone, there's no rigging involvement there. Not saying that they do that at RVL, but I'm telling you, you do think that from time to time. You know, this is the theatre for the horse, and it's a bit of theatre.
What barry would you have chosen if you're Mystic Journey? They wanted barry number 6. They had the inside gates there. And they have to think, there's a lot of talking on the phone to the trainers and the jockeys because tactics play a part.
Sure.
But by the time the Cox Plate arrives, you might want to be drawing wide anyway. With a little bit of rain around, obviously they've got the Friday night meeting.
Correct.
And then the Saturday meeting.
I don't know what obviously the whole fields aren't out yet, but the Cox Plate theoretically could be like race number 16 on the weekend. So
it is the second last.
Yeah, well, correct. So that's got to be 16, 18. I reckon they'll be run 8 on the Friday night and about 10 on the Saturday. So there's 18. So it could be race 17. So you actually might be right, but you know what? You want to draw in. It's as simple as that. Different race, but I remember the year Forensics drew Barrier 1. And they said to John Hawkes, oh, Barrier 1. He said, yeah. And if I drew 16, you'd tell me I can't win. Give me Barrier 1 every day of the week. And she duly won from Barrier 1.
Lise Crusoe is the favourite. Everybody that has an idea are telling me that she's nearly over the line. She's that good. A Group 1 winner over there in Japan. She's the best Japanese horse ever to arrive here in Australia. She's drawn a little wide, but I had a chat to Mr. Yagi before upstairs, the trainer of Lise Crusoe, and they're pretty happy with that draw because she's out of trouble. They would prefer to draw out wide, the Japanese, than closer to the inside. What's the talk around Flemington?
Probably your biggest thing from her point of view, the horse's point of view, is that you've got to know where they settle in. And to be honest, everyone says, yeah, my horse settled in. And sometimes they certainly don't. That's the key to actually being here on race day, being in the mountain enclosure or looking over the mountain enclosure, to actually have a look at the horse to see how the horse is acclimatised. Because you travel to Japan, It's not easy for a 10-hour trip. So you imagine what the horse has done to get here and to go through quarantine. So it's a big ask. You know what? I always think every time people bring that up, this is the best horse to come. I always think Oscar Schindler. He was the greatest horse to come from Europe, and he got a flog in the year
Kevin
he came.
Kevin Prendergast prepared that galloper.
So what?
Yeah, I've got a story about Kevin Prendergast. You want me to tell you that story quickly?
Yeah, why not? It's your show.
I was over there in Ireland, and I was at the Curra. And Mr. Prendergast is a little bit like your father in a way. He doesn't really like to talk to the media. Anyway, he heard my Australian accent, and he came across and said, "Where are you from, Ken?" I said, "I grew up in Birchip." And you wouldn't believe
he's... Where's Birchip?
Birchip's in the Mallee part of Victoria. We should take you there.
Why? You'd leave me. You'd leave me there.
They would sort you out in the pub. Don't worry about that, Wayne Hawks. But
not even giving out free Hawks racing hats.
One of the Birchip farmers, one of the Lees, I think, went to Ireland on a bit of a trip, and he fell in love with Mr. Prendergast's daughter. I think she babysat me at one stage in Birchip. So it's a small world at the end of the day. I don't know why I told that story. We'll move on.
You know what? Either does anyone else listening.
Wayne, so who's your tip in the Cox Plate? Because you're great friends with James Cummings, and he worked at Villiers at Flemington this morning. What can you tell us? You probably saw that piece of work.
I did. I did. I don't know whether that was the best work he could ever do. I'm not sure, because you got to be consistent and watch these horses. But from a trainer's point of view, forget about the work. I saw the horse, and wow, does he look good? He's going to look so well. I was going to say sexy. He will look sexy Cox Plate Day. There's no if, buts, and maybes. The one I keep thinking about has been the Cox Plate favourite all the way along, and they just keep giving her nothing. It's a little girl from Tasmania. Mm. She hasn't done much wrong, Mystic Journey, and you know what? Things didn't go right for her in the Turnbull, and she's been set for this race. I'd still have my money on her.
It's 10:42 here on RSN Central with Gareth Hall, and of course this is Wayne's World on a Tuesday morning. It's a pleasure to be with you on such a wonderful day, and I love the build-up to the Cox Plate, and you're with Mystic Journey, and I can just imagine. I talked to a few of the connections inside there at the Barry draw, and Tasmania's a lot at the moment. It is buzzing because of this mare, and it is great for racing in that state. It's great for their state, because even people who don't necessarily follow racing are following the Mystic Journey story.
Well, it is a good story, and it just shows you good horses can certainly come from anywhere. And I suppose it's not just the big name trainers that are just winning, that are winning all the big races. So it's going to be a great story. It's going to be a better story if she wins, because when she hasn't come back and done what everyone thought she'd do, just come through and dominate, people jump ship very quickly. It's like the horse that wins last week's favourite, the horse that runs second beating a nose is 8-10-1. I never quite worked that out. You've only got beaten by the proverbial inch, and there's always so much difference in the price quite often. So be a great story for Tasmania. And you know what else? Hell of a job too, bringing that mare back and forth. Correct. on the boat to Tassie. I mean, so much can go wrong. Mm. You know, I mean, you have to have your seasick tablets, that's for sure.
Hats off to Adam Trinder, and he's been so good to the media with his social media posts of Mystic Journey. He keeps everybody updated on her, because as I had a chat to Wayne, one of the part owners there upstairs, he said, and we'll listen to that interview, but he went and picked up his mum, or a friend of his mum's, and a 96-year-old girl was in a nursing hospital or getting out of hospital, and she said, I'm coming home because I've got to go and watch Mystic Journey in the Cox Plate. So she's a horse that's bringing everybody together and inspiring the people over there in Tassie. And I guess it's like an AFL club, like a West Coast playing in a grand final, or Brisbane playing in an NRL grand final or AFL grand final. The whole state get behind her, and they will follow her journey to Melbourne, and she'll jump on that Spirit of Tasmania and do it all again. No other horse will be travelling 10 hours by boat to arrive here to compete.
She wins when she goes home. Do they get the boats in front to boo the water cannons over the top and everything like that?
Forget about the Sydney to Hobart.
Couldn't they fly her home if she wins?
I don't think they can get a flight, Wayne.
Is that why? Yeah. Is that really? Yeah, fair call.
Maybe you should take a horse to Tasmania. Have you ever done that?
Won a Tasmanian Oaks once, so you didn't think I was going to say that, did you?
No.
My wife's from Tasmania.
Is she?
She is.
The beautiful Jane.
Yes.
It's got me buggered how she found you.
It's got me buggered how I got her.
She's a Group 1 superstar, and you're a claimer out the back.
Yep, now, 100%.
Wayne, what about Trope?
Yeah, it wasn't sexy this morning when the barrier draw came out and you drew 10 of 11.
It doesn't really matter, does it? He gets back.
Well, it does. It does, because I don't have his form in front of me, but he's drawn 10 of 11, 9 of 12, 13 of 15. You look at nearly his last half a dozen starts, he's hardly drawn a single-digit barrier. So I know he's a back marker, but he doesn't have to be so far back. That's the biggest thing. And if you draw the gun barrier, you draw barrier 5, you might be a pair or two closer, and excuse me, that might be the difference.
What you need to happen in that race, Bivouac's drawn barrier 1, Loving Gabby's barrier 2, you need pace out wide. You need horses like a Vital Silver.
Well,
and
I was hoping
nah.
the Bivouac and horse like that were going to draw wide to come across and put a bit of pace. And
so it makes it difficult when the big guns draw the inside and they kick up. It sort of takes the pace out of the race in a way.
It does. It does. But you know what? You dealt the cards that you're given. So, you know, that night, Chautauqua won. He just sat off him and just towed him up. Okay, he's trope. Chautauqua, probably not. But you know what? It's probably not quite as good a field either, I don't think. That night, it was a star-studded lineup.
Do you like the Matacado before the Cox Plate?
I would rather not have the Friday night meeting, just because if something went wrong, if it poured with rain and stuff like that, we talked before about Winks being about race 16 or 17, I would rather it all just be on the Saturday, but I can understand why they do it. They've got their day and their night in the sun literally here at Moonee Valley, so they need to cash in on it, don't they?
Would you love to see a Cox Plate at night?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I don't know how it works.
Well, at night.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how it works from a punting point of view. Whether we support it as much at night time, I'm not sure, because Saturday is primarily the main time slot. But you know what? It's certainly going to be interesting when they rejig this place up. And you know what? I was actually against it, and I won't lie to you. I was thinking, why would we do this inside? Have you actually seen the photographs and the drawings that they've done inside here, Gareth? You have, of what they're going to do to this joint. They're going to turn it upside down, inside out, and you know what? I reckon it'll be a breath of fresh air for racing. And I think one of the biggest pluses is the track's going to be about 30 metres wide in circumference. So you know, you'd be in Perth, right? You'd be watching the rail out 10 metres. The leaders are just dominating and win all the time. That's going to go away because we're going to have bigger field sizes. So Moonee Valley is going to take on a whole new dimension in a couple of years.
One aspect that I love about Moonee Valley is that it's the Coliseum, and you feel right on top of the horses, like you head here and you can and it feels like you can touch them.
Well, it is, because you are well, you actually can. You are so close. And I always remember it was about 10 years ago, and there was a little bloke called Kieran McAvoy. He's done okay. And he went down out the front, and he stood there, and he looked back up at the crowd, and he just stood there like a kid in a toy shop with a $100 voucher, didn't know where to start first. And I said, mate, I can see you enjoying it. He goes, no, but what you don't get is I'm normally used to being out there, and I don't have a ride in the race. And he said, I'm just looking back at the crowd. He just looked like one of the Thunderbirds. He had a big fat smile on his face and was watching it. And then since then, I've actually done that plenty of times, just actually looked. And I remember this year in Brisbane, I watched the Stradbroke with curator Mick Goody from just inside the winning post, where no one's allowed to go generally, just to watch the horses and the roar of the crowd. Because when you're actually involved in it, you do miss a bit of the theatre, I suppose.
I love the Breakfast with the Stars. Obviously, some trainers don't like to take their horses here, but most of the big stables, Waller was here, Mara and Eustace were here. You saw Tiako Shark work on the course proper at Moonee Valley today, and there was such a big crowd, and it was great to see. Unfortunately, Wayne Hawks wasn't here.
No, we left Trope at home. We're big believers that you keep the horses in their own routine. Less things can go wrong, putting them on a float, bringing them across town, albeit we're running a couple the suburbs away, but you still would rather keep the horse in their own environment. Trope dead set was out there at 4:10 this morning and was back in his box by 5 a.m. So
when you talk to the connections of the Cox Plate horses especially and the horses that will arrive here at the Valley for the first time, how important is it for a horse like Liscrasseur to have a look at the Valley last week?
Does it make a difference? Lots of time it doesn't. No, I don't know.
Then why do they do it then?
Well, maybe because they're coming to get a better grass surface than what they have where they're trained upon. Mm. People sometimes want to come and it's more maybe out the back and the familiar surroundings. I mean, horses can't talk. So you can only imagine, and you're only thinking to yourself, will this be an advantage or not? You know, I mean, it might be worse if you've got a horse that gets revved right. Elise's is a perfect example. I mean, she gets as revvy as you know what. I'd, I know she's not running this weekend, but I bet you James Cummings wouldn't bring her because he wouldn't want to get her wound up and things like that. So there's certainly for and there's for and against.
Did you enjoy Caulfield Cup Day?
I did actually. Yeah, it was a great day. You don't want to see that bit of interference, but you know what? You got big fields and things like that. That's always going to happen. But
you're a bit harsh on Laney there last night on racing.com, weren't you?
No, it wasn't about him. It was just about that when you get suspended twice, you serve them concurrently. So if I drive out the front here and I get pinged for speeding, and I drive up the road 10 minutes later and I get pinged again, I can't throw in the concurrent rule and only cop one fine, can I? You get fined twice.
If you have a parking fine, you leave it on your car. They're not going to give you another parking fine.
And then you sit there for 24 hours. Is that what you do?
Yes, I do.
Really?
it wasn't
about Damien Lane. It was more about the rules. And you know, good on Damien if he can get away with that. But yeah, I don't know. It's you do something wrong twice and you only get one penalty. If he did this today is another day. If he did the same thing today, he would cop two completely different suspensions and they mightn't be concurrent.
I love talking to the trainers because obviously it's such a big build-up to each and every week these days in the Spring Carnival. We've got Guineas Day, Caulfield Cup, Everest Day over there in Sydney, Cox Plate, then the Flemington Carnival. Like, how do you restart? Because it's like not like a rugby league or an AFL club where you just play the one grand final. You've got your grand finals on four consecutive weeks.
It's flat out. It's busy. And when you're in the middle of it, you're going, wow. All of a sudden, you get to about now and you go, this is all over in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
4 weeks' time, I'm back to a Friday night at Moonee Valley with average horses. And that's no disrespect to them, but that's what you're doing. So it's a massive hard slog in Melbourne in winter to get all the way through winter. Then you hit the spring and you wait till now. And these couple of weeks just fly. We're going to be talking Melbourne Cup winners shortly. And before you know it, it's Christmas time. So you want to try and bottle it. And the way the weather is at the moment, it's fantastic.
Can Supernova win at Geelong there tomorrow?
Yeah, I think he can. It's a great race for him, and I've been a bit vocal in saying that not just because he's in it, but the Geelong Cup should be an exempt from ballot race.
Well, you've got connections at the VRC.
Well, I train. It doesn't mean I've got connections.
Well, you tell me that they listen to you.
Well, no, I only tell you that. They don't really.
Have you had a chat to them?
No.
No, why don't you ask them?
Probably should.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't want me to tell you what I'm going to say?
No, okay.
Oh, you want me to say that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the bottom line is, with tomorrow, it should be a $500,000-$600,000 race. It should be a Group 2 race, and it should be an exempt from the ballot, because what you might do is you might entice some of the overseas horses to want to give them a run. We all know that, what have we had, two winners, Media Puzzle?
No, you've had a Mary Kay Media Puzzle. I think Dunedin went to the Geelong Cup and won.
Yep. So, I mean, it's becoming, well, because it's a great time race. Moonee Valley Cup is just a few days later, and you're 13 days to the Melbourne Cup. It's just enough to give them a good pipe opener. The thing about it is if you've got an overseas horse running in the Geelong Cup for the first time, it's actually going to show you exposed Aussie form, because you can't line up the Ebor and you can't line up the race at York. We can't line up Flemington and Randwick some days, let alone international. So if a few more of these internationals actually get to race at Geelong, I think that's a good thing for the punter, because they actually get to see real dead-set Aussie form.
Do you think, for the benefit of the Australian punters, that these international horses need to have at least one start in this country before they compete in a Melbourne Cup?
With me just travelling horses up and down the eastern seaboard, horses always are better after they've had a run. Now, I know they train differently, so I can't comment on them, but I always find that when I've always been involved with a horse, you take a horse away, they can have a run, they can win, but they're always better after they've had one run and settled in and acclimatised. So all I'm thinking is if the Geelong Cup's an exempt race, you might get, I don't know, let's make it up, Aiden might have a cracking young horse that hasn't qualified.
Yep.
Let's get him and set him for Geelong, and then we've got 2 weeks to really do not much with him, and then bang him straight in the Melbourne Cup, because the one thing that is absolutely almost dead and buried is the Bart Cummings must race on the Saturday, and you must race, and then you back it up in the Melbourne Cup 3-4 days later. It's about the only place in the world where we've always done that. You look at all the other great carnivals around the world, we don't do that.
Wayne, we had a chat to Matty Stewart about this yesterday regarding the Country Cups. Like, Geelong probably would be a little bit disappointed with their field sizes there tomorrow. We had the Seymour Cup on the Sunday, we had the Horsham Cup on the Sunday, we had
so
the Maui Cup on the Thursday afternoon. I know they pushed the Bendigo Cup a little later on in the year. That usually would have been held this time Wednesday week, basically.
Sure.
Do you think that there's too many country cups. And I know
that Cotton Cup's after Melbourne Cup.
Correct, yeah. Do they try?
Yeah,
obviously
we
do. They want to capitalise on the spring carnival.
Well, we do. But then you're saying that, I mean, you go to Kyneton on the day after Melbourne Cup Day and we're almost raced out, and there'll be a huge crowd there. So spreading it out during the year, I reckon, is probably a better thing.
For field sizes anyway.
It all keeps getting back to one thing. There are so many races and staying races, whereas you look at races like the Seymour Cup, they're back to a mile. And some of those country cups are actually coming back in distance because we don't have enough. The Melbourne Cup is the craziest race. It's our race, and our breeding industry has zero to do with it. It's now, look at the Geelong Cup tomorrow. There is not one Aussie bred or Kiwi, and we call them our own. There's not one Southern Hemisphere bred horse in the race.
What about Brutal? Were you happy with him on Saturday in Sydney?
He was good. Yeah, he went super.
Did you like the Everest?
Did I like the Everest? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I thought it worked fantastically well, and I think we need to stop stuffing around. I think we need to make it a Group 1 next year, and you know what?
Well, that hurts the Matacado.
It does, but you know what?
That's life.
That's life. The Australian Guineas and the Randwick Guineas are quite often run on the same day each year. Goodwood Handicap used to clash with the Duma 10,000. It is what it is.
I'd be interested to get your thoughts. I don't know if you had a chat to him about this, but your father, John Hawkes, a legend of the game that's been there to nearly every carnival in this country, what does he think of the Everest?
Yeah, look, I don't know. You'd have to, you'd actually have to ask him. Mm. But I don't know what he actually thinks. I know he'd like to win it.
Peter Volandis, obviously he was up and about on the weekend, and it was a tough start to, it was a brilliant start for his week, and then that 7:30 report. First of all, get your thoughts on that.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Filthy. Use any adjective you want on the radio. Appalling, all those adjectives. But it's an abattoir. I don't think if we went and saw a heap of cows and sheep, I mean, I thought about this. My kids are turning 10 and 12, and I thought, if I show them the most beautiful, cleanest abattoir, done the most legitimate way, and showed them cows being, not slaughtered, is that the right terminology?
Yeah. Well,
however you want
killed,
to say it.
Yeah.
Killed, right? And then we show them how we debone them, we do everything we do, and then you go and get the steak and put it on the barbecue and then serve it up to them. Do you reckon they'd eat it? The answer's no. Not a 10-year-old girl. They wouldn't. We have to be responsible, and the bottom line is we need to take more responsibility for what we do. Is it your fault that you buy a car and then you unsell it and they unsell it and they unsell it and they call it pre-loved now? But the bottom line is it ends up with five different owners, and before you know it, it ends up on the scrap heap, and in the meantime, it's been involved in an armed hold-up and a hit run. Now, that's not your fault.
No.
So it's not a trainer/owner's fault. If he has onsold the horse, given it away as a hack to a girl, she passes on to someone else, she sells it to someone else, it ends up in the front paddock, and all of a sudden it ends up in the knackery.
Yeah.
So we don't want that. So the bottom line is, what we need to do is, the first thing we need to do is, and no one's even looked at this one, we need to get rid of brands. Because if we get rid of brands, that'll stop identifying these horses, unless you have the, it's like a magic wand that you put over the horse with the microchip.
Yes.
So you actually get rid of the brands for starters, so they can't be identified. That's number one. That's not saying that then we send them to the abattoirs. What we need to do is we need to rehome these horses. And I like Ian Smith from Edinburgh Park, what he said. Get $1,000 for the horses.
But he brands those horses because he knows...
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. But he's saying he wants to buy him back for $1,000, and he'll always guarantee a home. $1,000 gets you over the threshold of the abattoirs and the knackeries wanting to buy them, because obviously I don't know what the price is, but it must be $500.
Yeah.
So you'll always. I've been told there's been sales where the reserve $700 just to stop this from happening. We need to rehome these horses. We need to do things like, when your registration
comes... Make a farm
comes,
for them.
Yeah, when your registration comes through, pay another $1,000 up front. Pay another $500 when you buy a yearling at the yearling sale, and that money helps to go towards, because owners... If you've got an owner and he's the boss of BHP, he doesn't know anything about horses. No. Let's make it up. And he's in a syndicate of 20 people. He doesn't know 15 others in the horse. When the horse is finished racing, what do the owners do? They then go back to the trainer. As a trainer or a bloodstock manager or a syndicator, we don't own the horse. We're only acting as agents. So we have to do something with the horse. So we need to have these facilities in place, and it's as simple as going on the website and following each of the things that we need to do. It needs to be national. It all needs to come in together. It's like having an infestation of ants. If you're living right next door to me, God help me, if you're living right next door to me and you've got an ant plague in your place, well, I can get rent to kill him, but it won't help unless you work with me. Because what will happen is, if we then say, let's bar abattoirs, we'll start doing things like they'll be going underground, as in, sneaking over the border and doing everything like that.
Yeah.
Why are they going to Queensland?
I think
it's legal there.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes it's black and white. It's common sense. The national government need to step in and put in regulations and laws that you can't send a thoroughbred to the abattoirs unless you get...
A veterinary certificate,
correct,
for humane reasons. And we do need these things
properly,
because we need to humanely put animals down. It is as simple as that. But we have a life thing where people have cancer and people are fighting, saying, I want to have the Jack Kevorkian because I don't want to live like this for the rest of my life. So that's starting to come into our play. So we need the same thing with the animals.
And it can't happen. What we saw in that 730 report, it can't
disgusting
happen. No. And it's
the way
happen
they did it.
And it's the wake up. Well,
do you know what pissed me off the most about that 730 report? That they had 2 years of footage and vision, and they've sat on it. So you know what, Mr. Do-Gooder, whoever he or she is, has sat on some of the information for so long. Why didn't they go to Peter Volandis after the first one and show him and go, have a look at this. This is what we're doing. They've sat on this information for up to 2 years. I'm not saying the ABC did, but whoever's taken the footage has sat on it for that long, and then they've come out with a gotcha surprise. That's crap. That is crap journalism.
And I have faith in all the administrators now, because this is the biggest issue in racing that we need to deal with, and we need to be on top of it.
Can we come together more as an industry?
Will. Yeah.
You know what? Not just with the abattoir debate, with all the debates.
And if you break those laws when they put those laws in and you send a horse to the abattoirs, then you're in all sorts of trouble.
We need welfare of the horse.
And they shouldn't be allowed to do it anyway.
Correct. We need welfare of the horse. We need welfare of the participants. We need to show off our industry in a great light, because we're not a punting industry. We are, but there's a lot of people that work
great
in the industry
people,
that don't have anything to do with punting.
It's 11:02. We're running out of time here on Wayne's World. I forgot to ask you about exceedance. Are you putting the blinkers on Wayne?
Well, we will for Friday morning's trial at Flemington, and then we'll see how he trials up the straight and decide whether we have the blinkers on.
My whispers at Flemington were saying, have you seen that horse of Hawksy's?
He looks all right. The form's okay.
It is.
Bivouac and
started him in the Everest.
Well,
they were talking about Bivouac. If you had Yes, Yes, Yes's run, do you win?
In the
Everest with all that pace up
too
front?
Too hard to tell. You know what? They're not easy. It's only hypothetical stuff and doesn't matter. Yes, Yes, Yes is the winner, and good luck to him.
Do you have a winner for us?
Supernova. I do like him tomorrow at Geelong.
So he gains it. Well, he should get into the Melbourne Cup if he wins at Geelong.
No, I don't know. Has he passed with the qualifying clause? I'm not sure whether he has.
Oh, hasn't he?
Well,
so you'll have to back him up in the Bart Cummings then?
No, in the Lexus.
The Lexus.
Is it called the Lexus now?
Yeah, I think it is.
Still.
Hey, Wayne, thanks for joining us here on this Tuesday, because...
I'm getting sunburned.
You are. You got the red head. Your face is red. You're a light-skinned man.
I've never gone into 927 had to put sunblock on. I got out here, folks. When they said it was an outside broadcast, fair dinkum, it was a table chairs.
He's done a mighty job. I'll tell you what. He sweated up in the yard. There's no doubt about that.
Wayne Jane Iver wouldn't pick me.
Yeah, definitely not. Thank you very much for that, mate. You're a good man.
Thanks, Gareth.
The best of luck, especially on Friday night with Trope.